That was kind of you.
You're welcome.
Man, that was kind. Who's she talking about? Is this all right? Good morning. My name's Joe Krogan. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a bit intimidated. It's been an incredible weekend, hasn't it? Yeah, really. Bob talked about drinking from a fire hose. That's what we've done this weekend. And I'm going to try and mess it up a little bit. No, I'm going to try. God, this is, you know, I have just absolutely enjoyed being here with so many people. I've saw so many tears this weekend. A lot of hearts have been touched. Ours especially. Got to be here with my wife. A treat. And the people that spoke, Mary Emma on Thursday night, an incredible story and just a message of strength, which I'm going to talk about, the 12th step, practicing these principles in all our affairs, you know, able to match calamity with serenity. What a great example. Bob, who is speaks to my soul every time I hear him, and I become his friend. I don't know if he is. I'm kind of like, I just, you know, if you don't have men that you emulate in this program, you'll never grow. And women, if you don't have people that you emulate in here. Mildred, the queen of Alcoholics Anonymous, is gone. I love Mildred, and she's back there in the back? Yeah. Mildred and I had a funny experience together. I got invited to do a Big Book weekend one time. I'm going to pretend I care what time it is. You're all stuck here anyway. You know, you're only going to go home and practice these principles. So I got invited to do a Big Book weekend, and they said, we'd like to have a woman join you. And who would you like? And of all the women that I heard, I said, I would like to do this with Mildred. She didn't know me from Adam, but I knew her. And brought Mildred down to this campground. We had a great experience there in this campground together. But I grew to love her. And my fondest memory was on the way out, Mildred gave me a kiss. So that was a great treat. And Hillary, thank you for your story. What an inspiration. And I don't think there was a dry eye in the house when you spoke. And Ralph, God bless. You are a great example. You rocked the house today. And I'm so glad I finally got to be with you. I've listened to you so many times. I am in awe of being here. I have to tell you that. I am in awe. And, of course, don't worry. I'm not going to forget Clancy. I hope he didn't realize that I got to stand next to him and hold his hand during a Lord's Prayer. I didn't want to let go. I get a little emotional sometimes. Forgive me. I had open heart surgery around 6 years ago, and a couple of the side effects I had from the surgery are you get very emotional. And the other thing is I'm a little self-conscious, not so much anymore, but I've developed a tremor in my hands, so my hands shake. And so a lot of times when I'm in meetings out of town, I'm the guy in the back of the room crying and shaking, you know. And people are always going, hey, keep coming back. It gets better. I'm back in the room. God, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new, and there were some new people in this room, I'm on step 12. I know you're on step 12, so you can take this time to go back looking for him or her or judging us. Go on. I don't want to disturb you. No, I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad, you know, my first time I ever went to one of these deals was in Daytona Beach, Florida in 1991. I was 2 weeks out of a treatment center, and the speaker, my sponsor, the kindness of strangers, most of us are here because of the kindness of strangers, somebody said, follow me. And if I had another alternative, I would have taken it. But I didn't have any other alternatives. And the speaker that Saturday night was Clancy. Changed my life. I walked away knowing what my problem was. I'm an alcoholic. Didn't quite know what the solution was, but I knew what the problem was. I really was an alcoholic. My sponsor was one of those guys. He's just one of those great examples of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we've heard so many of the people here, and we don't follow generals. We follow sergeants in this program. The people that go before us and say, come on, follow me. Do what I do. And that's how it's worked in my life. And I've been so impressed by how smart everybody was that was up here. I mean, we've really got some intelligent people. Good news. I'm going to really talk at a lower level. We're all good. Good news. I graduated out of 140 kids in my high school class. I was 139th. And we had a set of twins that were mentally challenged, so I was in between them. Yeah. That's a true story. I got a real job when I was 47, and I had to apply for. I had to get my high school transcripts, and I went, God, one of those guys was smarter than me. You know, I don't even know where I'm going to go. Everything has been said so well and so good. I think I'm going to say ditto and drive safe. No. I mean, how can you top this weekend? But step 12, I get to give the good news. I get to give the good news of step 12. It is the good news for us. You know, this is, it talks about in the 12 and 12, the theme of step 12 is the joy of living. If I didn't find a way to get high on my recovery, I'd get high on something else. This is the payoff. And Bill talks about, I think he described the process. Ralph said, don't worry, you can't be 48 years wherever you're, be where you're at. Grow where you're at. Do what you're doing fine. If you're in this room, you're doing fine. I hear this all the time in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. It says, don't leave till the miracle happens. The miracle happened the day you walked through the door. I mean, take a person. I don't know what you were like. We had a guy last night with 9 days, or a woman with 9 days, or 6 days, another guy with 6 days. You know, that was astounding for me. I mean, being sober was like holding your breath. I could only do it for very short intervals. And you know, sooner or later, I had to breathe. And so when you walk into this room, think about the astounding thing. Bob posed the question. And I had thought about it all weekend long. Where would we be? Where would all of us be without that stranger, without the meetings, without the steps? You take a person who absolutely can't stop, doesn't know where to go, is absolutely hopeless, and they walk through the door and all they do is sit down and say, I don't know how to do this thing, I'm lost, I need help. And the next thing you know, they got 6 days and 9 days and a month. The miracle already happened. They're just the last ones to know. See, that's the sponsor's job. It's over the next period of however long, he's describing to you what's going on in your life. Oh, by the way, that was God. How many times have we been in a meeting and we've heard somebody say, man, I wanted a drink last night so bad. You don't know. That's all I thought about. And there was no, I tried to call, nobody answered the phone, and they share about this in a meeting the next day. Did you drink? No. That was God. Oh my God, wow. See, because Frank used to say, my sponsor, who I love dearly, he used to say to me, Joe, you wouldn't know a miracle if it hit you in the name of the Father. And I wouldn't. I am a real alcoholic. Thank God that I found this society where I fit in. It's an incredible place where we fit in so well. And I didn't want to be here with you guys. I wanted to come here and shoplift recovery. That's all I wanted to do. I wanted to just get what you... Listen, I don't know what my problem is. Bake, fix me, and I'm going to go back out and be a successful version of me. And that's what I wanted to do. I'll do these steps. Bill talks about the journey that we have, and he describes it like this. He said, First, we do these things because we must to stay alive. Then we do these things because we know they're right. We just start to develop some sort of conscience. We develop a sense of sanity, maybe. And he says that eventually we do these things because we love the life it's afforded us. What a life we have today. And Mary Emma, your story was, he also said this. He said, when we can enjoy the entire pattern of life, like we enjoy that part that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, the entire pattern, that includes everything. You know, Ralph said, trouble always starts out like fun? Well, blessings always start out like trouble. Right? The things I've been running from my whole life, I should have been running to. And I wouldn't have never known that. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm still running to them. I'm not. And we are, thank God we're such a flawed society and that we are who we are here. I'll tell you how I drank a little bit, and I'm going to tell you a little bit what step 12, I love what Mildred said, I'm going to talk about the transition of step 12, what it meant to me when I first got here. I'm going to try not to be inappropriate or crude, but that probably won't happen. I was in my first meeting. I didn't know what those steps were. I think I was around for 8 months before I read the steps and thought. But I would hear people say things like, this has to be a way of life. How in the heck do you make those things a way of life? They were disjointed, disconnected, didn't mean anything to me. There were nothing attractive in them. Like I said, if I could have another alternative, I would have taken it. I didn't. That's the good news in Alcoholics Anonymous, the two alternatives. And the spiritual, you know, on page 44, it says, you know, if when we drink, we can't control the amount we drink, or when we stop, we can't quit entirely, you may be an alcoholic. If that be the case, you're suffering from an illness that only a spiritual experience will conquer. Well, who the heck wants a spiritual experience? No sex, no fun, shuffleboard and bingo forever. That's not what I want. I mean, that message was brought to me by an old guy. I got out of a treatment center for indigence in Miami, 40 years old, went to the only place that a good 40-year-old alcoholic goes, Mom, I'm home. Mom lived in a little trailer park for retirees in Central Florida. It was hell. It was hell. Is where it was. You had to be 1,000 years old to cross the county line. I moved in with Mom, and this old guy is the guy who brought me the message of recovery, brought me the program. He was next door watering his lawn, this old guy. And I'm going to tell you how old he was. He was actually 2 years younger than I am today. Jeez. This old guy, I know, came saddling over and he's watering his lawn and introduced himself, said, my name's Frank. And he says, I hear you had some problem with alcohol. Mom's been talking, huh, Frank? Would you like to go to a meeting tonight? And I said, sure, it's either that or stay home with Mom. Let me describe something to you. Tell me if you didn't pick up on this. He says, I'll pick you up at 7:15. 7:15, I looked out the window. There was this little white car sitting outside idling. He never beeped the horn, never came to the door. He just sat there and waited. I finally got into his car. We drove off to a meeting. I smoked all his cigarettes, burned up all his gas, never offered him a dollar for gas. But on the way home, I know what my problem is. We sat at a meeting. There were 50 people at this meeting in Central Florida for retirees. There were 50 people. You couldn't put together a whole set of teeth in the entire meeting. And I sat there thinking to myself, they're so lucky I'm desperate or I wouldn't be here. And then I started feeling better about myself because they all kept telling me, oh, keep coming back. We're glad you're here. Oh, they must know about me. Frank's probably told them about me. You know? Like I'm some prize. And on the way home, see, I know what my real problem is. On the way home, I said, Frank, could you stop at the 7-Eleven over here? I need to buy some lotto tickets. Because that's my real problem. I'm sober 6 months. I spent 6 months in a treatment center. If I get out of this treatment center, I'm bargaining with God. When I win this lottery, God, I swear, I'm going to do good things with this money. So if you're new, we know what your plan is. Thank God I never won the lotto. But see if you guess this. The next night I'm having dinner, and a quarter after 7, that little white car was sitting outside idling. Never beeped the horn, never came to the door. And I thought to myself, I missed the part about us going steady. Eventually I got out. I thought I could outwait him, and I couldn't. You people are very patient. You're very patient with us. You know, and he took me to a meeting, and that's where Frank started to set me free. Took the process of these steps. And we went through these steps. And there's been things said. I want to tell you, before we get into this, I am not an expert on Alcoholics Anonymous. I am not an expert on the steps. I'm not a teacher. I'm not even really a speaker. I'm just a talker. there's a difference. I'm just one of those blowhards that don't say no. Would you do this? Okay. You know, and I end up here sometimes and I go, how did I get here? But you know, what I really am is this. I'm a satisfied customer of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a story. Here's what I want. When you used to say in the beginning, at that meeting, when I was sitting there with all those old people, and they'd go, if you want what we have, I don't want what you have. But I do today. I want what you have. There's a story I heard. I'll tell you this quick story. It's a... I'm going to try and make it dirty. No, it's not dirty. I'm kidding. I'm just kidding. My Tourette's kicks in every once in a while. There's, you know, the book talks about those that are normal in every way except for their drinking. I'm not one of those. I'm the grave mental and emotional disorder guy. So, and I have a terrible case of ADD, so I'm going to jump way around. Ralph, keep me on track, will you? Just give me one of these. This wise woman who was kind of a guru was living up in the mountains, and every day she used to bake some bread and sit by the stream. And she'd go by the stream and sit there and meditate. And one day when the spring came, they had washed some stones down and through the stream, and she looked in the water and there was this precious stone. And it was worth a lot of money. And she knew what it was. She recognized it. She just took it and put it in her basket with the bread. And she continued to do what she did every day. Out of the mountains came a pilgrim that had been on some sort of pilgrimage, but he was tired and hungry and dirty. And he came up to her and he said, I would love something to eat. I'm starving. So he opened up the basket and she gave him some bread. And he saw the stone and he said, geez, I would like that stone. Would you give me that stone? And she gave him the stone and he went away. And the next day, while she was sitting by that stream again, he came back. And he said to her, and he brought her back the stone. He said, here's that stone. He said, I found out what I really want is not the stone. What I want is what's inside of you that enabled you to give me that stone. That's what I have seen over and over and over again in this program. I was telling Ralph the story about watching Clancy walk away in the airport on a Sunday night when it's cold and you're by yourself and you're traveling. And you know, my sponsor was one of those guys. I'll tell you a story just so you get a little reference on the well I drank from, because that was the well I drank from. He was not a guy who taught me the steps. We did a lot like yours, Bob. We did step 4 and 5 together, and he helped me with 8 and 9, we did our third step prayer on our knees, but the rest, basically, he showed me. I followed Frank. And Frank knew how to... Frank was that guy. He would say, here's how he introduced me to prayer. What the hell? Try it. Exactly. I can listen to that. You imagine a priest in church going, what the hell? Try it. Okay, we'll do it. And he'd get a lot more results, probably, right? But Frank's two daughters, he had two grown daughters, and one was a high-powered executive, worked for IBM. She came down with Lou Gehrig's disease. And within 2 years, and Frank and Betty are elderly right now. They're, you know, 90 and 89 years old, and they live a pretty comfortable life. But Frank's active. He's out every day, sponsors new guys. I mean, he is active in recovery. And their daughter got sick, and eventually she was wheelchair-bound. Eventually she couldn't speak, you know, kind of like that Stephen Hawking. You know, she had the computer. It was the only way to communicate. They had to bathe her. They had to take her to the bathroom and change her diapers and feed her. She had, and it was a real strain for these guys to lift her and to do this. And they left their home, and they moved down to where they were living in South Florida. And it ended up being 2 years before she passed away. And this is the kind of, this is the transformational process that happens in here. We take a wretch, that song Amazing Grace, and look what it turns into. I remember Tammy and I were praying for Frank and his family every day, and finally he came home one day to pick up the mail or pay some bills or do something, and I got to be with him and said to Frank, I said, Frank, I am so sorry for what you're going through. And here's what he said. He said, that was my oldest daughter. I raised five kids. She's the only one that saw me drinking. She had to take care of her little brothers and sisters. She never got to be the little girl. Today, she gets to be my little girl. I feed her, I change her diapers, and I bathe her. Now, where do you get stuff like that? How do you come up with this crap? Only in here. It's amazing. And those are little by little. We've seen these things over and over. You know, when I was out there trying to get it for myself, I couldn't get it as hard as I tried. You know, Frank, we'd go off and go to meetings. Frank put me on the circuit. We were going every single night to a different meeting. And he knew how to get me to go to a meeting. He'd go, well, tonight we're going to Ocala. I go, man, that's an hour away. He goes, well, there's some ex-strippers that are sober there. Okay, let's go. That's Frank. He knows how to. He's a motivator. And I'm single, living at mom's. Come on. 40-year-old loser, you know. And some of you women like the weak and infirmed. And so we'd be on the circuit every night, and Frank, you know, took me through the process of the steps. I'll recap the steps a little bit, and I remember sitting in meetings and looking at those steps and had no clue. You know, this talks about the spiritual awakening. It is amazing. I don't know if there's anybody else in here. Isn't it amazing how asleep we were in our life? That I didn't have a clue? That I was so busy pretending that I knew. It was amazing. And I didn't have a clue. And it's a lot of work to let you know, to pretend, to keep you thinking I know something that I don't know. It was a heck of a lot of work. And I'd read those steps, and finally, you know, I'm, you know, powerless over alcohol. That doesn't mean anything to me. And, you know, my life's unmanageable. I knew my life was unmanageable, but I'm going to get it back together again. You know, heck, I always land on my feet. Like you said, Ralph, you know, I can talk my way out of anything. And didn't know that was the problem. And Frank would say, listen, I'm going to explain the first two steps, which are critical. We can't move on until you get these two, especially step one. And he explained it in a way that I could understand. It was a very simple way. He said, I'm going to tell you what step one is. As we were driving in the car, he said, step one, you're screwed. Period. End of sentence. And I remember thinking, well, Frank, that's not good news. I'm here for this. I'm here for some help. That's not good news. That's terrible. I said, if that's true, then it sounds like it's going to take a friggin' miracle. He said, that's step two. And that's how it was explained to me. And he had a way of telling you, you know, I mean, this is the land of miracles. I get to live in the land of miracles today. We all do. And he set me free in so many ways. He set me free about this thing with God. We all had a problem. A lot of us did have a problem with God when we came here. I believed in God because I was too much of a coward to not believe in God. And I wanted to hedge my bet, you know. But I was sure he was mad at me. But I didn't want to see. I thought of God like you would think of a person you owe a lot of money to. I know he's out there, but I hope I don't run into him. Has no influence on my life. And Frank said, listen, well, you don't have to believe in God to do these things. And you don't even have to believe in God to do step three. He said, why don't we try something unique? He said, let's try living like there's a God. And let's see what shows up. And that's what happens in this process. Bill says, we do not have a monopoly on how one can acquire faith. See, that's why church didn't work for me. I'm not saying it wouldn't work for some people. It does. But what I heard was this: you have to have faith. And I knew when I took my spiritual temperature, there was no faith. Luckily, I found you. And when I got here, they said, no faith? That's the entrance requirement. You got no faith, no hope. Great, you're going to make it here. We can use you. And that's what happened here. It says that we have no monopoly. What we have is a way in which one can acquire faith. And that's what, wow. So this process helps me to believe. And today, I believe, and we've heard every one of the speakers this weekend describe this power. And basically, none of them gave us any dogma, any real outline directions. Tell me what he is. Tell me, you know, and the newcomer dilemma. You remember the newcomer dilemma. Am I doing God's will? I want to know what God's will is. And that, I really want to do God's will. And Bill kind of let us off the hook. I didn't see this till later on, and it was pointed out to me. He says, just as we do as we think he would have us do. Do this other stuff first. Let's clean up some wreckage. You'll be on a much better level to judge what you would think he would have you do. And, you know, your spirit, I was in spiritual kindergarten when I got here. We had Thanksgiving dinner. We had all our grandkids at the house. We got four grandkids. The youngest one of is 1 year old boy, and he just started to walk a week before he got there. His head is full of knots. Right? Black and blue marks, knots all over his head. That's me. That's how I've done recovery. Full of knots, banging into walls. And the pain has taught me, oops, I better not go that way again. And that's how I learned this thing. And then did my third step with Frank. After I did my third step, I said, if I've got God, you know, why do I need the rest of these steps? Because they look like they're not going to be very comfortable. And there were things I wasn't going to tell anybody. I remember my folks went back up north and they left me. I stayed in their trailer. It was actually a manufactured home, you know, one of those half house, half trailer. I called it Mom's Halfway House. And I stayed there while they were gone. And now Frank lived right next door. Now your sponsor lives right next door. So I did the third step and I thought, well, if I've done this and I've got God, why do I need, I've turned my will and my life over to God, why do I need the rest of these steps? See, I'm always the guy that's been in the rooms going, I want to do just enough AA. God forbid I have any leftover AA at the end of the week. I want to come sliding into home plate. Love you, Bob. You too, Linda. I want to come sliding into home plate. I want to be that. That's the way I tried to work this program, to just enough. You don't want to take more medicine than you have to, right? I'm the guy that stops the antibiotics 3 days before you're out of pills, right? That's I did this third step, and now Frank says, we got to get together and do our fourth step and our fifth step together, and I want you to work on your fourth step. Well, it's hard to avoid your sponsor when he lives next door and you go to meetings every day together. So I'm coming up with excuses. That side of the house, I had all the blinds drawn. It looked like a crack house. They were drawn so tight, no light could escape. And I would come home at night, and I would turn my car off and turn the lights off and coast in the driveway. So the lights didn't pan across his house. True. And then I would peek out the blinds, and when his car was gone, I would call his house. Hey, Frank, where the hell are you? I'm trying to do this fifth step thing. Some are sicker than others. And but eventually, the pain got so bad, and it really did. The insanity, alcoholic insanity returns, and we drink again. So the insanity happens first. And that was a hard lesson to learn. I ended up doing my steps with Frank. Frank made me go to a private detective and get a credit report run. I had hired a detective to run my credit report and my criminal report. And how appropriate. You know, the only, and I was a guy who got here with some baggage, some, you know, I was a dropout. I hadn't paid income tax in 20 years. I hadn't. So one of the things, how appropriate, the charge that was against me, pending, was a felony, and it was scheming to defraud. I've been scheming to defraud my whole life. That's exactly what I do. I scheme to defraud everybody I meet. But he made me go through this thing, and we got rid of all these things one by one. We paid the IRS and worked through these things, and they're... And I started to get some results in my life, some promises. You know, the steps are kind of like this. At least my, and I'm going to give you some opinions. Believe me, I am wrong. Don't worry about it. I'm probably wrong. It's a much freer place to be when I'm wrong. But here's in my demented thinking somehow that the steps are kind of like the military service. Not that I've ever been in the military, but I've watched movies, so. And, you know, when your life is in the toilet and you got nothing to do, what do? You go join the military. They'll pick up the tab, right? I remember thinking that when I was in this Skid Row motel room at 40 years old, thinking, what I need is some discipline. Maybe I could join the military. They didn't have a lot of use for 40-year-old alcoholics. But that's what I thought the problem might be. Lack of discipline, right? So, so you go down, and now what do? That's the first step. You know your life is in turmoil. I need some help. Maybe the military. There's step two. And you go down to the recruiting office, and what do they do in the recruiting office? You go, man, I want to join the military. Put your hand on the Bible and swear in. And that's step three. They don't give you a gun. Don't even have a uniform. Don't even have a drill sergeant, no sponsor, no nothing. And you get sworn in. But you're in there. The bus is leaving Thursday. Be on it. And if you're not there, you're AWOL. Because you are now in the military. And that's what happens kind of like here. And we go through the steps. It's like the process of boot camp. They work on you and they take you and they get you into shape. My son was, I shared the story about it. He was living in his car, 18 years old, living in his car, one of the wheels had fallen off, and where it stopped, he lived. That made sense to me. He was on the side of the road, and that's where he lived. Put up a mailbox. No, he didn't. He didn't. And so I went down to try and rescue him, and that's when I told him, what you need in your life is a power greater than yourself, and I've got the answer. Pick one: Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard. Take one. Well, he went into the Coast Guard and he went into boot camp. And here's a guy who went in selfish, self-centered, me, I, me. And what they do in the military is this. Dick will tell you this. They take that I, and at the end of that 8 or 12 weeks of boot camp, you become a we. You're different. We went there to watch him graduate. And that's what these steps have done in our lives. Not, I mean, I saw it in yours way before it happened in mine. I was lying about it in mine way before it really happened. But that's what I've seen it happen. And we went down to watch him graduate from boot camp, and he came out in his uniform, and he was all dressed in his blues, and it just was, what a man. I cried like a baby, surprise. I cried like a baby. I mean, I looked at him, and he was a man. And I remember walking out of the ceremony, and we had to go back and get his bags and stuff. And I said, he had his bags and he was carrying them. And I said, we can go over here. The car's parked over in that lot if we just cut across here. He said, no, Dad, there are no shortcuts in the Coast Guard. There are no shortcuts in AA. Now, you can take them. I mean, I love what Bill says about, in one of the forewords, and he talks about of the people that come to AA, 50% get sober, and then another 25% will get sober eventually, and then the other 25% show some improvement. Now, I used to be really, you know, make fun of that. But the truth of the matter is that really is true. You know, I'm an old car salesman, and we used to have a saying in the car business. There's an ass for every seat. Thank God. Because if I would have got here having to behave, having to do what you did, you'd have thrown me out. You didn't. We love the unlovable. That's what we do. We think we're lovable, but we are really unlovable. Think about the people we hurt in our life. Most of us hurt all the ones we loved. Now, I'm not saying there isn't. There's some armed robbers and some people that have hurt strangers, but that's the exception. The people we've really hurt, think about your amends list. Who are the first top people, five people on that amends list? Probably somebody in your family. Mom, dad, brothers, grandparents. I'm going to bring this TV back, Ma, I swear. You know. So, in the process of this service is what we do, and we come out of that boot camp, and we're now, here's what they do, here's 10 and 11. We're going to give you a backpack, we're going to give you a rifle, we got to give you some tools to get through, and they're going to give you some K rations, so now you're ready. But you know what? They didn't do all this training for you to go back and go, phew, glad that's over, going home now, I'm in shape, feel better, work better, having a better time. That's not what it's for. Now the action begins. Now the bumping of your head begins. The practicing these principles in all our affairs, the helping the other alcoholics. How do I really make this way a way of life? That's the incredible joy, struggle, and joy. And I love when Hillary talked yesterday. It talks about it in step 7. It says, this process is unbelievably painful. It is painful coming to know you. And when Bob talked about doing that fourth step, giving your friends those notepads and a pencil and telling them you're having difficulty getting in touch with your character defects, I don't want that meeting today. I don't want to have that happen today. Think, if that happened today, I'm going to hear some things that I don't like. Really don't like. I'm going to cringe. Oh my God, I'm such an idiot. Because we're, you know, it was the things I didn't know about myself that were killing me. And this is the process of finding out, but we've got some tools. We got the rifle, we got the backpack, we got the sleeping bag and the K rations, and we got love, we got home group, we got sponsorship, we got fellowship. What an incredible fellowship. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that are not alcoholics of my type. But it doesn't matter. You're welcome too. Come on in here. I have to search for the ones that are saying the message I need. You know, because they send everybody here. You get a DUI, they send you here. You may not. You may have just bumped your head once or twice. I don't know. But if you're a real alcoholic, Ralph and I talked about this. If you're a real alcoholic, it talks about it in the book. Here's what Frank said to me about step 1. If you're not 100% convinced that you will drink again, you will drink again. I said, man, that sounds complicated. He said, it's not. And the book talks about it when he talks about Fred and the accountant. It says, my friends prophesied that if I had an alcoholic mind, the day would come when I would drink again. See, if you're not 100% convinced, you won't do these other things. And this practicing these principles in all our affairs, this is the tough part. Now, Frank was a service-oriented guy. We all know you got to help other alcoholics. There's a trap in there, but we all know you got. And Frank got me. We'd get into that car, and Frank was always going to pick up new guys, and we'd always have a car full of people. Now, I live next door, so I'd get the front seat on the way to the meeting. But on the way back, these new guys have this incredible sense of entitlement. And I got to race out to the car to get the front seat. They don't know Frank's my date. And you know, they all want to be in the front seat again. You got 3 days sober. Shut up. You smell like stale beer. Get in the back seat. And, you know, because I'm with Frank. But Frank was one of those incredible guys, and we met him in AA. He was one of those guys. He had his 10th anniversary. We talked about this. Or one of his 25th anniversary or something. We were there, and a bunch of his sponsees were there. There probably were 10 or 12 guys he sponsored there, and they all... And I got to be the last guy that spoke that night. And I said, now I know you all think you're Frank's favorite. But that's what the effect he had on us, is that we all feel loved. And when you talk to the men in these rooms, that's the way I feel. The men that have gone before me, the Keith Lewis, the Tom I, the Clancy I. There's some heroes in here. These men, I always wondered, how do they do that? How do they make someone else feel important? See, there are only two types of people in this world to me. The ones whose backs I was stepping on to get to the butts of the ones I was kissing. That was it. All the rest were invisible. And that line you talked about, Ralph, that's why it's called an invisible line. We don't know we crossed it. We're well into it before we know. And that's... So Frank... talk to me about this stuff. He got me involved in helping others. We went right away to detox, and matter of fact, but things started to get good in my life. I was involved with guys, but I didn't really want what you had. I didn't do all the steps. I was sponsoring guys. I was giving them opinions and giving them advice. Yeah, advice really works here. I killed probably a dozen guys those first 5 years giving them advice, you know. You don't need that stupid job. It's all politics there. Quit that damn thing. She doesn't appreciate you anyway, man. God. You see her flirting at the meetings? Get rid of her. I mean, because I'm a wise man, you know. And because you can't give away what you don't have. And I hadn't had it. What I had was the alcohol and the obsession, the compulsion lifted from me. But I didn't have the spiritual part yet. I wasn't willing to walk around and bump my head. I wasn't willing to do those things. And it was easy. The book talks about getting it in the 12-step. It talks about two-stepping. That part of step one we accept, and that just that part of step 12 where we help another alcoholic. Because that's where we get the joy. On the top of page 64 it says, when these men have discovered the joy of helping others, there will be no stopping them. So there is a joy. You got to be persistent because you're really helping a lot of losers. But like me. But what happens is you start to see people get well. You start to see their lives reconstructed. You start to catch yourself doing things. You start to catch yourself caring about people. So there's this feeling that you get. And then you start two-stepping. And I started taking back management of my own life. I met my wife in Alcoholics Anonymous. She worked at Intergroup with Frank. And Frank, you know, kind of talked about her every day. And so I felt the relationship was sanctioned by the Pope. So this is going to be a great relationship, right? She works with Frank. And I started to get promoted at work. I went back to selling cars. And I started to get promoted at work, and things started to get good at work. And it was some tough spots, but little by little, here's what Frank did for me. Frank was just a signpost. He never gave me advice. He always pointed me to God. His favorite statement, and my favorite statement to the guys I sponsor, is I want you to pray about it and let me know how God works it out. We're going to God. Those things Ralph read, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, what's number one? And I believe the order of those things is imperative. We ask God. This is a God-reliant program. I have to train myself to go to Him first. Because what do we do? I'll tell you what I do when things go bad. I struggle harder. I work hard. I'm going to manage more. That's what I do. Reliance on God is a foreign thing. And this is where we get this. We've got to step off some cliffs. We don't know what's below us in this program. I tell guys I sponsor going in, this is the most courageous thing you'll ever do in your life. We're going to do it without a net, you know. This is it. And Bill talks about it. He says, to be fearless and thorough from the very start. So I guess it's going to take some courage from the very start. and some thoroughness. And so my life started to get better. And I got married. We blended our families together. I had custody of my son, and she had her kids, her two kids, and we got married and moved away. And I got the best job I ever had in sobriety. I was 5 years sober, and I had this big job running this car dealership in West Palm. And but I hadn't really taken a look at those things in our life. Bill talks about romance, prestige, and security. He also calls them sex, security, and society. And those are the things, those are the areas that we live in. A much more effective demonstration of these principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. This is where our maneuvers take place. It was great. I was great for that 1 hour a night in that AA meeting. I really liked people. I cared about people. And, I mean, I'd be the first one to go get you coffee, you know, or give you my chair. But outside of the AA meeting, you don't really mean you take this out there. That's different. There was a separation of church and state in my program. And this is where we dissolve that separation. I didn't do that voluntarily. I had to do it with much pain, unbelievable pain, as Hillary said. At 6 years sober, I started working really hard. I stopped going to meetings. I moved away from my sponsor. The type of program I was practicing was one like this. When my sponsor would call, I'd say, "Tell him I'm not here." Because how many times can you tell him you're doing okay? "Yeah, I'm doing great. I'm working 14 hours a day, 6 or 7 days a week. I'm not home. I'm a cardboard cutout of a dad and a husband. And I'm lying, cheating, hiding money, doing things I shouldn't be doing. I'm absolute." And when I get home, I pull that cardboard cutout out, and I want my wife to buy into that I'm present. And I'm not present. And all of a sudden, at 6 years sober, she said, "Get out. I want a divorce. I can't live like this." "What?" And I was astounded. So I was brought to my knees in sobriety, and I did not have the comfort of knowing that it was alcohol and drugs that had done this to me. I couldn't hide behind it. It was so painful. I was so angry at her. I hated her so much, trying to expect me to be something I'm not. That was my mantra. "This is it. At least I'm sober. You know, this is me." And I was embedded in that philosophy. And she said something to me as I walked out the door. Some of you heard it the other day. She said, "Can't you see that all your relationships end the same? Defective relationships are the cause of all of our woes, including our alcoholism." Now, I didn't see it when she said it, but those next couple of months lying in bed, not eating, the anger and the resentment, eating my lunch, I started to hear it more and more. And I wanted to seek solace in the bottle. I really wanted to. Matter of fact, I drove by this bar. I saw it. It was so attractive. I said, if I ever go back out, because to go to a meeting, I had to look into where and when. And the name of the bar caught my attention. It was very attractive. It said Bar. And the parking lot was in the back, you know, and it opened at 8 in the morning. Kind of place I could be a big shot. They will buy into my crap, right? Because we seek out lower companions. I was always good at finding them. And I drove by that bar night after night for 7 nights, wanted to drink, but it's hard to drink when you got 6 years sober. It's hard to take a drink when you know your lifestyle is about to change. There's no more, because of that talk, that step one, knowing that it was embedded in me. I'd unworked the steps all the way back to step one, but I couldn't unwork that one. I was convinced that if I make this decision, if I run my life again, it's going to change. When I drink, my lifestyle changes. I don't know about you. There's no more illusion of drinking at the piano bar. Stemmed glassware. I may have glass stemware, but it won't be in the piano bar. Just a little sneaky one in there. And I was on my way to that bar, and I left my little boy asleep in the house, and I drove across town to that bar, and I was a block away, and I was underneath a traffic light, and I could see the bar, and I had these butterflies in my stomach. I know I'm going to drink. I know it. I don't care tonight. The last thing I did was curse God and get in my car. If this is sobriety, you can have it. I'm done. And I looked over and there was a broken down van with its hood up over here, and it had a front license plate, and the front license plate read, "Have you prayed today?" And I heard, "What the hell? Try it." That's what I heard. And I said the Serenity Prayer, and I ended up across the town at a meeting I'd been to one time a year earlier. And I walked in the back of the room, and there were 150 people there, and I sat in the back of the room. There was a man at a podium, and he sat there, and he said, "We in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, we have, this is an anniversary meeting. We have celebrate anniversaries here. Is there anyone here celebrating an anniversary in the month of September?" My sobriety date, September 12th. Like an idiot, I raised my hand. And he said, "Here's what we do. We have five or six celebrants. Since we have a visitor here, they all come up and share for about 5-10 minutes how they stayed sober. We have a visitor. Why don't you start us off?" Yeah, it's funny to you. Wasn't funny that night. And I got up front and I did what Ralph talked about, what Bob talked about. I got in front of the podium, I turned around, and I couldn't talk. And I'm a talker. And nothing came out but tears. And all I could say was, "I'm lost and I need help. I don't know how to do this thing." It's 6 years sober. And I was surrendered emotionally, spiritually. I was you could have the rest of my life. I didn't just surrender the alcohol. Now you can have it all. I am convinced I cannot run my life on self-will. Self-reliance had failed me. Thank God for that night. Thank God. Now, they dragged me off the stage because the treatment center had brought the bus and they had all the new people in the front row. And they go, "No, that's not how it is. It's 6 years sober." He's just humble. And I began that journey into to truly practice these principles in all my affairs. It looks scary, and I don't know how you're going to do it, but you're going to come to grips with your finances, with your relationship, and I hope, this is my prayer for you, that you find your right relationship with sex, with women, or men, that you find your right relationship with money, that you find your right relationship in society. We have a society where everybody's equal. I mean, we have been given the greatest tools in the world. It's divinely designed for our needs. Divinely designed to give us what we need. And I want to choose and pick. And I remember I had to take a look at my relationships. I was alone and I was angry, but I wasn't going to run into a new relationship. And that's not like me. I said, I cannot bring the same man into my next relationship. These men that dragged me off the stage took me under their arm and they said, "We're going to take you through the steps again. We're going to show you how this thing's done." And they got me back involved in service, taking meetings into prisons and detoxes and treatment centers. And I still do that today. But they got me involved in doing this through the steps again. And then they got me involved in sponsoring guys in the book. And that helped me more than anything. There was a guy here from a clubhouse that I met when I did this, when I went through this period. And there was this crazy guy. I was at a noon meeting, and I was on the verge of tears at every meeting because I was still boo-hooing about Tammy leaving me and my wife, you know, divorce. And this guy starts sharing, and he is totally insane. So I share a little bit at the meeting. After the meeting, he comes up to me and says, "Listen, I really like what you said. Would you consider sponsoring me?" And I said, "Sure. How long you got sober?" He goes, 5 years. I said, 5 years? I thought you had like 5 minutes. But that man, he's not alive anymore. I grew to love that man. I sponsored that man and took him through the steps. He changed my life. I discovered the gift. I discovered really the joy of helping others. Ernie saved my life. He's been in our home. What a great asset. What a great asset. God sends these opportunities for us once you decide you'll try it. The doors open up. The opportunities come to grow. They always look like trouble, and they always are scary, but they really are where the blessings are. I had to take a look at my life. Until my wife divorced me, I didn't know I was unsuited for marriage. There's a story about a woman who has a hearing loss. The man calls the doctor. He said, "Doc, my wife's got a hearing loss. She needs a hearing aid." And he said, "Well, how do you know that?" "Well, you got to be real close to her to hear her, for her to hear you." And he says, "Well, how close?" "Well, I don't know." He says, "Tonight when you go home, find out." So that night he goes home, he opens the front door. She's all the way in the back of the room. He goes, "Honey, I'm home. What's for dinner?" She doesn't turn around. She's busy washing dishes or something. And so he gets a little closer into the house. He said, "Honey, I'm home. What's for dinner?" Still nothing. Gets to the kitchen door. "Honey, I'm home. What's for dinner?" Finally gets so angry, grabs her, turns her around, grabs her by the shoulders, right in her face. "Honey, I'm home. What's for dinner?" She said, "Chicken for the fourth time." See, I always thought it was you. What a relief. I love that statement. If it's not me, there's no solution. And I've been avoiding it. I've been trying to make it you my whole life. My theme song was, "Why does this stuff keep happening to me?" And I had to learn how to be in a relationship again. I threw myself back into this program. That relationship developed with the men that I sponsored. I learned to be on time, caring. And then a little later down the road, my wife and I met. We had been divorced for a year, year and a half. And we started dating again. And we knew we had to treat this. What's Bill say? We treat this like any other problem. What are your other problems? I'm going to give you a hint. Comes in a bottle. We drink it a lot. Alcohol. Did we need his help? Yes. Then I need his help with everything. Why wouldn't I go to him for everything? We start our day off every day. We pray for our marriage. Even the days we don't want to pray. And there's a few. There used to be a lot more, but they're getting fewer and fewer. And usually one of us will break down and go, "Do you want to pray today?" And, you know, it's almost like saying no to God, you know. So we don't say no. We go, "All right." But you know how hard it is to stay mad or not understanding when somebody's sitting there praying for you? Or you have to pray for them? How about my relationships at work? I had to find out how to develop a different relationship at work. When we see our work as an opportunity for service, it doesn't matter what it is. My wife divorced me. I was absolutely broke at 7 years sober. I lost the, and then they fired me from my best job I'd ever had because it affected my, and I had bluffed my way into that job. I was not qualified. It was overwhelming. It was a 14-hour-a-day job. They fired me from that job, and for the first time in my life, because of these problems I went through, I made a decision based on someone else's welfare instead of my own, my son. I had my 6-year-old son with me, and I said, "Listen, I'm going to take a job that I can take him to school in the morning, and I can pick him up from school at night." I was down to rock bottom. What have I got left? And that's what it came to realize. What do I have left? And my sponsor told me, "Well, you have your fatherhood. You can be a father. You have your son. You have Alcoholics Anonymous, and you have God." Well, I'm going to be a good member of AA, and I'm going to be a good dad. And he said, "I'm going to tell you what to do." And he let me off the hook. He said, "Why don't you go get a job?" I said, "I'm trying." He said, "But I'm an uneducated guy. I'm a car salesman. How does a guy like me go to make a living?" And he said, "I'll tell you what to do. Go get a crummy job." And I took a crummy job so I could take him to school in the morning and pick him up from school at night. Now listen to this. The craziest thing happened. I got to be a great dad. I got to coach my son in Little League and baseball. We'd have dinner together at night. We lived in a house with no furniture. He had bedroom furniture. I had bedroom furniture. We had a TV in the living room and a couple footballs and basketballs. And we played sports in the living room. And we had a kitchen table. And we had dinner every night together. And it was one of the best times of his life. And I learned how to be a dad. Then the craziest thing happened with my work. When I stopped taking a job to get another job or to be in the boss, I fell in love with the job I did. I fell in love with doing the job to the best of my ability. That never happened to me. My philosophy about work is go there as late as possible, do as little as possible, leave as early as possible, get as much from them as possible. And that thought was a good work ethic, right? That seems like a good work ethic. You're not going to punch in too early, right? And you, God forbid you stay late. And it changed my attitude towards work. practicing these principles in all our affairs. That little job turned out to be a business, which I developed into a big business. And I'm not a businessman. I am not qualified. This is not linear. Hillary's story proves that. This is not linear. You cannot get from where I was to where I'm at without spiritual help. And I've seen it so much in all our lives. We get to live in that land of miracles. And that job developed into a business, which I sold in a short time, and developed another one and sold it, and developed a third one and sold it. They think I know what I'm doing. It's amazing. I mean, I used to ride around with my son. I go, I'm just like my two kids that we have. I go, I'm just like a real dad, aren't I? Today. And I had to develop a right relationship with money and see that money was not a means of happiness and getting what I wanted. Freedom from want. Freedom from fear is more important than freedom from want. And it didn't come gracefully. None of this comes gracefully. It comes with unbelievable pain. One of those businesses I started, we grew a little too fast, and I remember I was petrified. I had handpicked like 12, 14 people that worked for me, and they were friends. They were, a lot of them were in Alcoholics Anonymous, because when we have this thing, when we turn our lives around, we're better than we ever were. And it's still that way today. And I remember we expanded too fast. There was three hurricanes that hit Florida. I couldn't meet payroll. We hadn't done any business in 2 months, and I'm going to have to go to work. We got payroll in 2 weeks, and I'm going to have to go and tell these people, I mean, we're going to file bankruptcy. Because I was a big shot, and I expanded too much, trying to make more money to get more things. And I couldn't sleep. It was eating me alive. I'd wake up every night at 2:30 in the morning, and I'd have to get up and read the big book or read some spiritual books, and I'd pray. See, some days you get to feel the faith. Other days you just get to practice it. In Barcelona, Spain, in a museum, there's a diary. Christopher Columbus's diary. Christopher Columbus, that was a long journey. It was probably almost 3 months, right? Out in the open water. And every day he put a date and he put an entry for that day. And some days he had great entries. We saw whales, and then we'd get a little closer and we'd been out there and we finally saw some seabirds. Oh my God. Then we'd see leaves floating in the water, so they know they're close to land. But 95%, 98% of that dictionary, there's one entry at the top of the page. And today we sailed on. Today we sail on. Joyous expectation. That's what we do. We sail on. And I would get up every night and I'd make that prayer. And after 2 weeks, I finally, this peace came over me and I knew. Tammy would let me sit there and wallow in my own self-pity every night and my worry and stress. And finally, this peace came over me one night in the middle of the night. And I said, you know what? I can't lose anything that's important. I can't lose my relationship with God. I can't lose my relationship, my fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've come in here at my worst, and you love me. I can't lose my wife, the love of my wife. I can't lose my kids. I can't lose my home. I can lose my house, but I can't lose my home. My son and I lived in a studio apartment. His bedroom was a laundry room turned into a bedroom with posters of Dan Marino. And we were happy. And it just dawned on me. I can't lose. And so what? I tried. And I failed. I bumped my head. Big deal. At least I did it. And they'll get their money back. I know how to make amends today. They'll get their money. It may take a little while. It was all about my ego, having to tell them I failed. And this peace came over me. And I was okay. And I went to work the next day. I don't know if this is related or not, but there was a letter from one of the manufacturers that we buy hearing aids from, and this letter, they sent us a check for $35,000. We had overpaid the entire year, and we made payroll. And it's amazing how when you decide that you can handle this pain, that you're willing to step off the ledge, and you practice these principles in all your affairs, God presents it. I call them Bill W. moments. the moment in the hotel that Clancy described. Go left to the bar, go right to the phone booth. Our lives are full of those moments. Think of the trepidation and the fear that you had, and the think of how hard it was for him at that moment. That's what that moment looks like. See, miracles come in two parts. The problem and the miracle. We just want the miracle part. Bill talks about it in step 12. That we don't run from these things. That we get to see this pain as something that we can turn into use and comfort, like Mary Emma did, for ourselves and for others. We have heard some astounding things this weekend. I'm going to close with about seven stories. No, just kidding. Just kidding. Doesn't the book say, you know, I love that the book says, you know, that an alcoholic properly armed with the facts about himself can win the confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours? Hang in there. No, no. No, listen, I know we're all ready to go home. I am ready to go home. I am just so honored and privileged that I got to be with you. I got to experience this. I got to hang out with the people that I truly love. I truly love. They just didn't know I loved them. But I've always loved them. And we love each other. Your lives are as much a miracle as any one of us that got up here tonight. Absolutely. You just need to learn how to look through the rearview mirror. And that's what a sponsor does. Oh, can't you see that was a miracle? Oh, no, I didn't. Yeah, it was. And we learn to rely on this God and practice these principles in all our affairs. I'll tell a quick story. I've never told this story before, and I'll probably know why at the end of it. But, no, I kept my clothes on. I was at the end of selling our first business. My wife and I were blessed. We sold this business. Some big company came to town. They offered us this unbelievable amount of money to buy our business, and we sold it, you know. And so part of the thing I wanted to do was I'd always wanted to do a give back in some way. And I said, I'm going to go on a mission trip. Now I figured, okay, let's go on some mission trip. I'll go to Key West or someplace like that. They can use some help down there, right? Well, I got some big hearing aid manufacturer to donate some hearing aids. And that's what I do today is I have hearing clinics and I get to fit people with hearing aids. My job is just an extension of my recovery. And I am so grateful and blessed to be that unqualified guy. When I took a crummy job and put it in God's hands, anything can happen. So I said, I'm going to go. There was a medical mission trip going, and it was going to Cambodia. I said, can't you guys pick someplace closer, you know, a little more exotic? How about Bermuda? Don't those people need help? So I ended up going and took some hearing aids and took some equipment with me and went to Cambodia to fit kids with hearing aids. We would come to the towns. They would set up this thing. The doctors over there would set it up. So when we came to these little villages and little, and I've got a picture of fitting a 7-year-old girl. It was an incredible experience in a hut, in a grass hut. She'd never heard, because they have so many ear infections, she'd never heard sound before. And putting the hearing aids on her and have her hear sound for the first time. I cried. What else? What happened was is they would come to town and they would line up their kids, because 70% of them have ear infections because of the humidity and the unclean conditions there and the unclean water. So we'd get to town and we'd have hundreds of kids lined up waiting to come in. And after the first day doing it, I had a translator, and I went back to my room and I thought about it. I said, you know, my life changed because I believed Frank. I believe guys like Clancy and like all our speakers here today, because I was so desperate, I believed them. And I thought, you know what? Tomorrow's going to be a different day. Hundreds of those little kids were lined up. And I told this translator, as every little kid came to me, before I looked in their ears, I said, I want you to tell this child that he's very special, that I can see that he's very special, and that God has a very special plan for this child. And I got to tell all those kids, if one kid buys it, One kid. He could change the world. He could change thousands of lives. If one of you buy it, you could change thousands of lives. So I leave you with this. You are very special. God's got a special plan for y'all. Thank you.